Welcome into ESPN FC. Steve Nichols, Sebastian Salazar in studio. Stevie, I hate to do this to you again this season, but later in the show we will be talking about Liverpool's ongoing injury crisis. Shaka Hislop will be by to discuss that. Archie Rintut will join us as well. Huge weekend coming up in the Bundesliga. Bayern's lead atop the table starting to dwindle. But let's start the show by welcoming in Craig Burley and Mark Ogden. Gentlemen, good to be with you on this Friday, a Friday that gives us the Europa League draw for the round of 16. Here's your matchups. Of note, Arsenal get Olympiacos, Spurs drawn against Dinamo Zagreb, Rangers get Slavia Prague, who of course eliminated Leicester City. And beyond debate, even on this show, I think the most enticing matchup, Manchester United against AC Milan, a slot on return to Old Trafford. Travel permitting. Here's your odds to win the Europa League. Manchester United installed as your early favorites. Actually, co-favorites with Spurs. English teams 1-2-3. Even Arsenal getting better odds to win the Europa League than AC Milan. All right, guys, let's focus in on those three English clubs, specifically their managers. Craig, I'll start with you. Which of the three need to win the Europa League the most?
I suppose Arsenal are 7-1 ahead of Milan, Sebi, because the bookies see it as Man United going through. That could be the only reason. But I personally think that Jose Mourinho needs to win this the most, because I think he's the man under most pressure. His league position at the moment stinks. The team's performances have been pretty rotten in terms of on the eye. And they're country mile off the top four. And at one point, the talk was, are this team in the title race? And so he needs to deliver something. Otherwise, he's under severe pressure. I mean, you could say, well, Arteta does, but he's got an FA Cup behind him. There's a transition to Arsenal. I think he's pretty safe there. And Man United will get in the top four. There's no doubt about that. So I actually think Mourinho is the man that needs it the most.
Stevie, you agree they still got a shot at hardware in the League Cup final. They got a shot at top six, maybe an outside shot at top four. Spurs really need this most?
I absolutely think so, yeah.
Really? More than Arsenal?
Yeah. I mean, Craig's pretty much laid it out for you. He's got an FA Cup behind him, less than 12 months ago. So he's fine. Craig said they're in transition. Mourinho, on the other hand, is not, in my opinion, going to be in the top four. That's why he was brought in. He wasn't brought in to do anything else. So it's important that he does produce silverware, because that will deflect away from what his job was in the Premier League. And unfortunately for him, yes, he's in a cup final, but the problem is the opposition of Manchester City, who nobody wants to face. So I'm 100% with Craig. This is absolutely Mourinho and Tottenham.
Mark, from the Manchester United perspective, just how important is this to Solskjaer? His record in cup tournaments is well documented. 0-4 in semi-finals. How big would that first trophy be?
It'll be very big, and I think, you know, he needs to win one soon, because it's now 4 years since Man United won a trophy, and, you know, Tottenham haven't won a trophy for a long time, and they obviously had the opportunity in the Carabao Cup. Arsenal have won one. I do think that Arsenal need this more than Tottenham, because 5 years out of the Champions League, that the finances at Arsenal are really, really desperate for Champions League football. But in terms of Solskjaer, I think United fans are getting a bit sick of being semi-finalists or knocking on the door. They're not going to win the Premier League this season. They need to win some trophies. This is Man United we're talking about. We're talking about a club that positions itself alongside Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Barcelona as one of the, or not the biggest club in the world. Well, the biggest clubs in the world win trophies, and it's now 4 years since Man United won trophies. And the trophies they won last were the minor cups. Let's be honest, the League Cup and the Europa League in 2017, they haven't won a big trophy since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. Let's be honest, the 2013 Premier League, because even FA Cups and the Van Gaal didn't really count in terms of the biggest trophies. So United need a trophy. They need to start winning again, and I think Solskjaer really needs it. But if he doesn't win a trophy this season, I don't think it'll be the end of the road for him. I think that he'll still be there, but I do think that for Man United to kick on and become, you know, this team that's going to challenge for the major honours, they have to win something soon.
Craig, if Manchester United... Go ahead.
No, I just think, you know, off the back of Mark's point, that, yeah, financially, Arsenal, but if we're talking about managers, I think it's Mourinho for the reasons that I think Stevie and I said, and the one thing is he'll say, well, and it's a big if, because it's not, you know, there's some good teams still in there. He'll say, look, it was a little bit dicey during the year in the league, and we lost Harry Kane, and he'll give it all these excuses. He'll say, but we won the Europa League, and that's Champions League football, because that's the carrot that is now dangled for winning the Europa League. Now, from a United perspective, as Augie said, you know, winning the Europa League for them and their historical standpoint is neither here nor there. Let's go to Mourinho himself. He delivered second place for Man United in the league. He delivered the Europa League and the Carabao Cup. So they've done that recently. They really need to be, you know, winning the Premier League title, at least gone neck and neck all the way. And for those reasons, I think, yeah, I mean, you would take a trophy as a manager and you would take it if you're Man United. But really, they want to be dining at a much bigger table than the Europa League. As for Tottenham, he just needs it desperately because they need to get in that Champions League and they ain't going to do it, as Stevie said, with the league position.
Manchester United then the favourites for the Europa League, but actually slight underdogs on Sunday away against Chelsea, matchup of second against fifth. Chelsea 6 points back of Manchester United heading into this one. Been a strong start under Thomas Tuchel, has to be said. 0 losses in the 8 games played. 6 wins, 2 draws, and as you see, 6 clean sheets in those 8. You can't really pick at the results. You can maybe pick at the performances, Stevie. You can maybe pick at who they've played yet. Maybe haven't been fully tested. Certainly this Manchester United match figures to be that first big test.
Well, it certainly will be. And I think, unfortunately for Chelsea and Tuchel, the way they play is on the front foot. And Manchester United love to get a good line and then just counter against you. And that's what's going to happen in this game. And so really, for Chelsea to break United's dominance away from home, because they're unbeaten away from home. And that's why, because they're so good on the counter. But for them to break this United side, they're going to have to create. And they haven't been creating. Yes, they've been pretty solid at the back. Yes, they've had plenty of possession. But they haven't been able to break anybody down. And so, for me, this plays right into the hands of Manchester United. This has got Ollie and Rashford on the break and Fernandes on the break. It's got it written all over it. I think this could be his first loss.
Really? Yep. Craig, how do you see this game going? I would see it as a 0-0. You got Chelsea who aren't giving up goals and Manchester United that like to sit back. You think we get an exciting affair?
I think there's every... I think we'll see a possession game, as Stevie mentioned, and that'll be mainly from Chelsea. I mean, that's the way... they've been doing it, particularly since Tuchel came in. In fact, it's been a little bit too much at times of just possession for possession's sakes. At times, they've looked as if they could carve one or two chances. In other games, they've looked as if they could be out there all day. Look, I agree, this is their biggest test. Atletico Madrid should have been their biggest test in midweek, but Simeone's tactics were horrendous and Chelsea were really able to dominate and come away without really breaking much sweat. This is going to be a game where, whilst they have the ball, they're really going to have players who are thinking about the other side of the game. And that's going to be interesting to see what his team selection is going to be, because Stevie just laid it out for you there. This Man United team under Solskjaer, the one thing they've been really, really good at is just sitting back, getting a good shape, and then hitting with a nice long ball over the top or breaking with a bit of pace. And we'll see if Chelsea can handle that, because they haven't really played many teams that have been able to do it. They've played a lot of teams that have sat in and sat deep, but they've not played somebody who has the counter-attacking game of Man United. And I think that's going to be the reason. It's going to be Chelsea's biggest test. I could see a draw in this game. I really could, because I think both sides are defensively decent. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see the team selection.
Mark, despite being well in control, Manchester United field a really strong team in that second leg against Sociedad. They've got some other big doubts. Cavani, Van de Beek, McTominay as well. How much a worry is that for Solskjaer ahead of this match?
I think it is a concern, because although United have been beaten away from home in the league now since January last year, they have lost a bit of momentum on the road recently. They drew at Leicester, they drew at Arsenal, drew at Liverpool, drew at West Brom. And I do think that there's a bit of vulnerability there. I never thought I'd say it, but I think Man United are missing Paul Pogba. I think that when he's not playing now, it all comes through Bruno Fernandes. They've only got one way to play. And I think teams have cottoned on to that. I think they know now which way United are going to go. Anthony Martial isn't performing. You know, there's problems with David De Gea in goal. I just think that one or two problems have started to rear the head at United, and it's obvious. You stop Rashford, you stop Bruno Fernandes, and you stop Man United. So if Chelsea can do that, I think United's long unbeaten run in the Premier League could end this weekend at Stamford Bridge.
You know, when you think of Tuchel, right, everything he's done is to try and get Chelsea forward to score goals. He's had like the blinkers on. It's all about going forward. Now he's got 3 defenders, the team Augie picked, there's no pace amongst the 3 of them. So for me, that's another reason. He's going to have the blinkers on. It's going to be about scoring goals, creating chances. And if really, if there's a team that want you to try that, it's Manchester United.
All right, was Zuma in your team, Oggy?
Zuma, yeah. Yeah.
Zuma, Rudiger, and Azpilicueta were his back
three. The reason I say that is because Christensen has played most of the big games, and also he's preferred Kovacic and Jorginho. But I just wonder with Fernandes playing, whether Kante will come into deciding what he's going to do with Fernandes. That's going to be interesting.
He's played Zoom in the last couple of games, I think. And as you know, Craig, the Stamford Bridge pitch is very tight as well, so whether they'll try and squeeze United a bit and kind of frustrate Fernandes. But I just think that United they're living on the edge a bit away from home at the moment, and that run will come to an end at some point. I just think this weekend, I think Chelsea have got the firepower to do it.
Here's a look at your odds for top four as we head to the critical part of the season. There you see Manchester United and Chelsea, despite the fact that Chelsea right now outside the top four, are your favorites to make it in and join Manchester City in the Champions League spots. As far as the top four, Craig, just how big a match is this?
It's big. I mean, I do think United will get in the top four. But at the end of the day, Solskjaer, I think, said himself a few days ago, look, we're not giving up. And I suppose he's got to say this, we're not giving up in the title race. But I think if that's the case, and I can understand that, you're always going to hope that there's going to be a slip somewhere from City. It looks unlikely. But they're going to, if that is the case, they're going to have to go to London and win. It's as simple as that. Because, you know, we know City play early on Saturday, and it's against West Ham have been decent, but it's unlikely. So even if they do drop points, Man City, which is a big stretch, United are going to have to go to London and win this game if they've got any aspirations of just putting some sort of pressure on the team at the top.
Sounds like Craig might be picking a draw there. Mark, one word. Who do you got in this one?
Chelsea.
All right. Mark Ogden going with Chelsea. Stevie, one word prediction from you?
United.
Wow, really? Look at us. Divided right down the middle. One for draw.
One for United, one for Chelsea. United have to win this game.
Right.
If they don't win, a draw's no good to them. If they seriously want to have any sort of chance of the title, because...
I mean, that's a very outside chance, even at this point.
So a point's no any good for them. Mm. No any good for them.
Yeah. He once again has come out the closet again as a United fan. That's several. He's even picking up a win now.
Yeah. All right, then we'll leave it there for now, boys. Thank you very much. Always make sure to check out our ESPN FC YouTube channel. We're almost up to 900,000 subscribers. Plenty of bonus material from the show there.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Werder Bremen, Eintracht Frankfurt, the only Bundesliga match of the day on Friday, turned out to be a pretty good one. Werder Bremen coming from behind to win 2-1. The game winner coming from young American Josh Sargent. Real missed opportunity for Frankfurt in the table. They could have jumped up to third. Instead, they are stuck in fourth, still 7 points back of your league leaders, Bayern Munich. For more, we welcome in Archie Rintott. Archie, what happened to Frankfurt in this match? They seem to be so well in control.
What happened was Werder Bremen came out in the second half and showed us what we'd not seen from them at all in the first half, or indeed last week when they were battered 4-0 away at Hoffenheim, which is they turned up and their game plan was executed. They were able to get in behind the Frankfurt wing-backs, particularly Filip Kostic, who was putting in such a shift, as he always does on that left-hand side, that when he had to turn back towards his own goal, I don't think he had enough energy to catch Theodore Gebrselassie and then Josh Sargent for that winning goal.
Let's talk about Josh Sargent, his 20th start of the season for Werder Bremen. He gets the game winner. What are the press and really people around Werder Bremen saying about Sargent and really his recent development?
Well, he seems to like playing against Eintracht Frankfurt because two of his three Bundesliga goals have come against them so far this season. But he's not doing the job of, say, Robert Lewandowski at Bayern, where it's his job to just get on the end of countless opportunities. Lewandowski does a lot more than just that. But the point is, Josh Sargent's job is not just being a fox in the box. He has to do a lot of work under Florian Kohfeldt. And you saw that tonight with the fact that he did more sprints than anyone else up until the point when he came off. And he has to be so patient for getting his chances on goal. Apart from two one-on-ones he had against Greuther Fürth in the DFB Cup over here, it's really difficult to remember too many great scoring opportunities that he's had in the past few weeks. And actually, if you count it up until his first shot of the game tonight, he'd gone 214 minutes without having a shot in a row on the pitch. Mm. So for him to hold his nerve in that key moment, I think he's getting respect, but and there's, I would say, an understanding of the fact that of the team he's playing in right now.
You mentioned Robert Lewandowski. Bayern Munich get Cologne on the weekend. Bayern had so many issues, Archie, upon returning from the Club World Cup, but then they looked so good against Lazio in the Champions League. Which Bayern do we get this weekend?
Good question, because it depends on what Cologne side turn up, because Cologne have taken points against every Champions League team so far this season, apart from Bayern. So they played well against them in the reverse fixture. I was there for that. Robert Lewandowski wasn't playing in that game, though. He was rested. And I can't see Hansi Flick doing that for any of the other 12 games this season, because Lewandowski has the chance to make history. If he breaks the 40-goal mark, he'll do something that Gerd Müller first did way back when. So big opportunity for Bayern as well to put some pressure on RB Leipzig before their game against Borussia Mönchengladbach. And the fact that Thomas Müller is back in the squad, he could even start as well. And Serge Gnabry is also back from injury. Those are big boosts for Bayern. Mm.
Archie, also on Saturday, Dortmund get Bielefeld. This feels like two things, both a must win for Dortmund and the exact type of game where they drop points.
Yeah, you put it well. This is the game where we always seem to see Dortmund struggling. And that's actually what Edin Terzic, the coach, has been saying as well about the fact that they need to find their consistency. And It's dull how much we have to talk about this, but for Dortmund's young players, it's almost like, you know, they've had fun last week, but now they have to go and eat their vegetables. this is the important stuff. If they want to get back in the Champions League again next season, and with Eintracht Frankfurt dropping points on Friday night, it's huge for them to beat Bielefeld, particularly ahead of this big week they've got coming up. Borussia Mönchengladbach in the DFB Cup. Think about the narrative there as well with their coach from next season, Marco Rosa, coming up against them there. And then they have a trip to the Allianz Arena to face Bayern. Mm. So that's a place where they've really not done very well in the past few seasons. So it's important that Dortmund, I would say, allay the fears of all their fans and do what no one expects them to do, which is win this game convincingly.
One more match to focus on then, Leipzig and Gladbach. Leipzig second. And Gladbach eighth, and yet both of them are coming off very disappointing performances, I think it's safe to say, in the Champions League.
The Germans have a word for that, for what you said there, and it's Jein, which means yes and no. So on Leipzig's point of view, I'd say yeah, very much so, because of the two mistakes that were made in that game. But you saw that Marcel Sabitzer, who made the mistake for the first goal against Liverpool, came back and scored a rocket last week against Hertha. And Nori Mukele, who made the mistake for the second goal against Liverpool, also came back and scored a goal last week in their win against Hertha. So they've shown a reaction from that. As for Gladbach, I thought that, to be honest, the gap in quality that is there, that there's not a huge amount that you can do when Manchester City are playing that well. And they produced the moments of quality that they did through João Cancelão's crosses. And Marco Rosa has said that as much, that there were, he counted 10 moments where they had opportunities in transition, but they only had one shot on goal from those moments. So the biggest question going into this game is, how well can Gladbach play out under pressure from Leipzig? Because that will happen. And you hear the very complimentary tones that Julian Nagelsmann and Marco Rosa talk about each other in the build-up to this game. I think that it's going to be a very intriguing battle, particularly because there's a lot riding on it for both teams. Gladbach don't want more pressure to build on them before that game against Borussia Dortmund, and Leipzig are going to probably need to win if they are to keep in touch with Bayern Munich at the top.
All right, thanks, Archie. ESPN Plus, your exclusive home for the Bundesliga this season. Archie will be, by the way, at Leipzig Gladbach, getting us pitch-side interviews and helping with our coverage there. The weekend starts with Bayern Munich and Cologne. That 9:30 a.m. Eastern time kickoff. Again, all these games on ESPN Plus.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Angelino becoming a star at Leipzig, but he was on the books at Manchester City from 2014, pretty much entirely through earlier this year when he was sold permanently to Leipzig. Apparently wasn't a good time for the Spanish defender. Quote, Pep has killed me in my self-confidence. After my move from Eindhoven back to City, he had already judged me on two preseason games and then didn't give me a real chance again. So I was happy that I moved to Leipzig and that I am now an integral part of the club. Archie, Mark, Stevie, all still with us. Archie, start with you. Is this just a case of one man's trash is another man's treasure? He's certainly become a huge part of this Leipzig squad.
I think the quote was not meant as much as at Pep Guardiola. It was the fact that he was left out killed him in that situation. And with Julian Nagelsmann, he has been given the freedom of the left flank in Leipzig, and he's just needed a coach who really trusts in him. But Nagelsmann has shown his ability as a coach to take players who maybe haven't had the best opportunities tactically with previous coaches and really brought the best out of them. And then after that, we've seen that those players have tanked without Nagelsmann. For example, Timo Werner, for example, Nico Schulz at Borussia Dortmund. So I think that Angelino is in the best place for his development right now. Nagelsmann was talking about him today in his press conference as well. And he still feels that there's a lot more to come from him.
Mark, it's interesting. You think if there was any manager who could get the best out of a player, it would be Pep Guardiola. What do you think happened here?
Yeah, I think Angelino probably paid for being at the club for quite a few years before Pep arrived. He had a few loan spells. And I think when you're in the club and you're part of the fabric, I think it's always more, especially when you've got a coach who is spending a lot of money on big players. Obviously, he spent, I think, £50 million on Benjamin Mendy, who's been, you know, it's debatable whether he's been a success at City, but certainly Pep was a big fan of Mendy originally. And obviously, Alexander Zinchenko also came through. Zinchenko's a player that maybe Angelino could have been the guy that came through the ranks and was given the chance to prove himself. But there were a couple of occasions that season when he had a couple of bad games at Liverpool and against Man United. You know, I just think that at the time, Angelino didn't have that. Maybe the confidence he's developed at Leipzig. And I do wonder whether defensively he's good enough for Man City. We don't know if that's the case. If he is good enough, he's certainly fantastic going forward. And for me, he's a perfect Pep Guardiola player in that respect. He does own that left flank. But I think at the time, he was just a victim of circumstance. He'd been there for too long, and he wasn't the glamorous big money signing that Mendy was. So I think that he's gone on, he's built a fantastic name for himself at Leipzig. And I think City would regret that he's gone on to do so well, because he would be perfect for them right now.
The left back now, obviously, Joao Cancelo. I don't think you have a debate there much. But for a while, that left back was like a big issue for Pep Guardiola. He had a player there who could clearly play it. Is this a black mark in any way against Pep?
No, not at all. You know, the problem that Angelino probably had was that Pep didn't see the things in his game that he wanted from a guy in his position. You know, if you look at the way Leipzig play and the way Angelino plays there, he's whipping balls in probably a dozen a game. Man City don't do that. Man City get it, they go to the defenders, they're looking for little one-twos. So it's a different way of playing. You know, Pep's not going to get rid of a player who, if he thinks he has the tools to make the team better. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's got nothing to do with an individual or anything personal. Pep didn't see the things in his game that was going to suit Man City. And you just look at Man City now. You've got a right footer on the left wing and you've got a left footer on the right wing. So he's not particularly looking for balls whipped in the box. So just didn't fit.
What about big picture? Is this a problem you think maybe moving forward for Manchester City? They have so many good players. You only have so many minutes to go around. I mean, you're going to see talented players come in and out of this club without really getting a shot.
It's just part of having that sort of problem. And wouldn't we all as coaches love to have that problem?
Hurts you in recruiting.
The problem is not... the only problem is for players. It's not a problem for Pep. Because he knows how to deal with people. So it's not a problem. You know, if he's not playing, you're telling him what you're looking for and he can't produce it, then you won't play. All the problems are on the players. How long do I stick this out? And clearly... Angelino didn't want to stick it out. And there's nothing wrong with that. He's now gone to a place where his talents, as I said, all maybe not the ones that Pep wanted in his side, he's able to flourish. So it's just a situational thing.
Our talents, they flourish daily on the podcast. If you ever miss the video version of the show, you can check out the audio version, available 7 days a week on the website.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
A look at the weekend's Premier League schedule. 4 games on Saturday. Action starting with Manchester City against West Ham. 5 on Sunday, including Liverpool's visit to last place Sheffield United. Won't be an easy trip, most likely, for Jurgen Klopp and company, if for no other reason than the growing injury list. Jordan Henderson, the latest big name added to the list. He's out at least a month after surgery on his groin. Jurgen Klopp saying he's hopeful they can see Henderson back with the team before the season is out. Let's start in the studio. Stevie, right now Liverpool 6th, 5 points out of the top 4. How worried are you, in light of Henderson's injury, about their top 4 chances?
I wouldn't say worried. I would say I've pretty much accepted that Liverpool are not going to get in the top 4.
Really?
Listen, with Henderson at centre-back, it was going to be a struggle anyway. But no offence to Phillips and Kabak. As individuals, neither of these two would probably get a game in any other Premier League side. And as a pair, they certainly wouldn't get a game in another Premier League side. And so, when you have that, how are you supposed to stop other teams scoring and creating chances? You know, in the middle of the park, yes, Liverpool are still good with the ball. But right now, without Henderson, without Fabinho, they can't stop anybody getting at the back line. And so you've got a back line that's creaking all over the place. You've got a goalkeeper as well who's going through a tough time. So I find it very difficult to see any light at the end of the tunnel as far as a top four place is concerned.
So you've got them finishing outside top four?
I think so, yes.
Wow. Shaq, I want to bring you in here. Top four, is this the straw that breaks the camel's back for Liverpool's hopes of making the Champions League next year?
Not the straw, but when you take into consideration, Fabinho should be back very soon. Diogo Jota should be back right after him. And that gives Liverpool a much needed boost, particularly at the centre back position, where as good as Henderson has been, I just feel, though Fabinho, not a natural centre back himself, is the better option there. So maybe that brings, maybe that fills the void that this Henderson injury causes. And Jota is a spark that maybe Liverpool need. The only consolation for Liverpool here is that of the three teams vying for that fourth spot, including Chelsea and West Ham, I think Liverpool have the easiest of the run-ins between now and the end of the season. Mm. That being said, Liverpool have made very hard work of games that they really should have won up to now. So top four, probably just about beyond reach, but that's because of how poor they've been.
Mark, what do you think? Top four still a realistic expectation for this Liverpool squad?
I think they have to win the next two games to have any chance, really. I think they have to beat Sheffield United on Sunday because they've lost four straight Premier League games. They have to stop that. They have to win at Sheffield United, bottom of the table. They can't not win there. And then it's Chelsea at home on Thursday at Anfield. Now, obviously, Chelsea versus Liverpool is a game that it could define that race for fourth place. If Liverpool lose to Chelsea, I think they'll be too far behind. Now, if they can come through the next two games with 6 points, then I think they've got the confidence, they believe they can go forward. As Shaka says, they've got players coming back. And, you know, Mo Salah's still the top scorer in the Premier League, so they do have positives. But I agree with Steve at the back. They are so bad at the moment at the back. And it's affected the full-backs now, you know. Andy Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold have been exposed time and time again defensively, which that hasn't been the case in the past because they've had such a safety net there with Virgil van Dijk. Now, you can get at Liverpool down the flanks and that they're really suffering at the back.
Mark, I'll stay with you. Let's turn our attention to another match Saturday, Manchester City and West Ham. Any chance that West Ham can stop this, what, now 19-match winning streak across all competitions?
Well, you know, I really don't think so. I think David Moyes has done a fantastic job at West Ham. He's made them a competitor for certainly European football. But, you know, his record over the years away to the top teams, the big six, is terrible. I don't think he's ever won a game away at the top six. You know, so I expect West Ham to go there. They'll try and keep it tight. You know, it players like Mikel Antonio and Jesse Lingard, they've got that ability to catch teams on the counter-attack and score, you know, the one breakaway goal. But we're talking Man City here. Well, I think when you play Man City at the Etihad, you need to score three goals to be in the game, and I don't think West Ham are going to do that. So I think it's another 20 wins on the bounce of Man City, and they're just looking unstoppable.
Shaka, what's the plan in this match for West Ham? How do they get something?
I'm not sure how you get anything against this Manchester City team, given what we've seen from them over recent months, in all honesty. And even if you look back to the first time that these two met this season, at the London Stadium, Manchester City dominated possession, some 76% possession, dominated everything about the game. But a Michael Antonio goal and City not kind of finishing their chances as they have been of late. So that game finishes 1-1. Now, going to the Etihad, the form that City are in, I just don't see it happening for West Ham, and unfortunately.
All right, gentlemen, stick around. We still have extra time to come on the show. Stevie, will you repeat that face for us? Yeah. I'll probably be repeating that one. You guys always get into me. We take your questions off Twitter. Have some fun tonight. It's Mark, Stevie, and Shaka.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The
playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
He's the man who gets all the interviews, Mark Ogden, most recently speaking with Manchester United legend Dwight York. They touched on a lot of topics, among them this.
So, Dwight, obviously you're a legendary Trinidad and Tobago footballer. You're one of the greatest players they had, played in the World Cup in 2006. So can you give us your top five Trinidad players, your all-time five-a-side Trinidad and Tobago team?
My all-time five. Does that include goalkeepers or not?
Yeah, we need a goalkeeper. Yeah.
We need a goalkeeper somewhere along the line. Okay. I'll leave the goalkeeping section for last. To the goalkeeping, I think a lot of people would think people like Maurice Alibi, not Maurice Alibi, I'm not sure. Maurice is one of the all-time goalkeepers that I recommend. But, you know, Shaka, maybe I think his brother Kona Hislop was a far better player, in my opinion. Certainly played in England for Gateshead United up at Newcastle up there. So he probably might just get ahead of Shaka, although Shaka is a very good friend. He might be think that he's been a little bit hard done by my five-a-side team. So, those will be my five picks. I will pick Kona Hislop just ahead of Shaka.
Shaka, the second best Hislop. What are your thoughts?
Big brother's always better. Am I in the team or not? I have no real problem with my brother being ahead of me, but he wasn't a goalkeeper. Mm. Unless Dwight is thinking of me as playing out in the field where, as I keep telling you all, I developed quite a reputation as well.
Yeah, I bet. Augie, did he include Shaka in his five-a-side in terms of field players, or was he just left out totally?
No, he told me that Connor was the goalkeeper, but Dwight also left himself out of the team, which I was surprised at. You know, Dwight York, of all people, would have picked himself, but no, he didn't even pick himself.
Oh, well, that makes the Shaka snub a little more palatable, I think, then, doesn't it, Shaq?
Yeah, it does. If Dwight can't get to the team, I don't think I have too many complaints. I'm not calling my agent over this one.
Man. All right, well, with friends like that, you know what they say, Stevie. He needs enemies, right?
Do they?
Thanks to, somebody says that somewhere.
Call them, we don't.
Thanks to Dwight for the soundbite. Thanks to Mark. Shaka, Stevie, Craig, Archie, everybody else who was on the show today. We'll see you next time here on ESPN FC. Welcome into this Friday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. Steve and Sebi here in the studios. We're also joined from abroad by Mark Ogden and a reeling Shaka Hislop, who was just left out of the all-time Trinidad five-a-side team. Breaking news by his good friend Dwight York. Emotionally, Shaka, how you holding up?
I'm doing okay, Sebi.
Yeah, you look like
I'm doing all right.
Yeah,
all things considered.
You look like real torn up about it. All right.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Well, you need to tell people that Dwight York never picked himself in it either.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Well, I know you knew that, but you need to tell the viewers.
Okay. Thanks, host. You want to come sit in the chair? Is that what you're aiming for here?
Why we're educating
the viewers, I'll also point out that I was left out of his five-a-side for my brother, who's never played in goal a day in his life.
Wow. I don't know if that says more about Dwight's selection process or your goalkeeping skills, Shaka.
Or maybe it has more to do with the time that Mark Ogden did the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the time D.
Let's leave that there for now. Next question. First question. Have Shaka and Steve... All right. We're going to need some context here. Have Shaka and Stevie ever heard of a player fining himself like Matic did for being late? What were the consequences for them being late to meetings, trainings? Have you heard this story, Stevie?
Why did you fine yourself?
So, and I don't know, maybe this isn't the way it's done in every dressing room, but apparently at Manchester United, Matic is the guy who's in charge of handing out the fines. It's a player that's in charge of it. So he was late to a meeting, right, and he fined himself. That's kind of weird.
Well, he didn't fine himself.
No, he did fine himself.
No, he's not.
Well, he's in charge of it.
Well, he's levied the fine. He's just following the rules. He didn't just turn around and go, oh, I'm going to fine myself. He's just following the rules.
Right.
So he didn't fine himself.
Isn't it weird, though?
He's in charge of collecting the fines.
No, well, because I'll tell you what. Mm-hmm. If you're the guy in charge of it and you fine me for missing a meeting,
right?
The first time you miss a meeting, guess what I'm going to do?
Totally. So it's always a player that's in charge of it. It's never like a coach or something.
Yes. Coaches. Well, normally what happens, what used to happen, let me go back to the 80s. What used to happen in the 80s was the manager, who used to do everything, if somebody was late or had got sent off stupidly and got, you know, the manager would fine them. What the managers, the good managers would do is they would collect all that money and at the end of the year, they would give it to the captain and say, right, take the boys out.
Nice.
So that's what used to happen with the money.
He was 2 seconds late, apparently, to the meeting. Matic said he fined himself for
late.
And would you have fined a guy at the refs for 2 seconds?
Let me just add here, Sebi. So when I was at West Ham, we had the same system. The players collected the fines if they were late for training, late for meeting, whatever. Players collected the fines. And what we did most seasons was you use the fines and we'd all go out for a night out at the end of the season or whatever. But one year we decided to buy a greyhound and have a greyhound enter into races and so we'd make a night of it during the next season. Our greyhound never won a single race. Our greyhound was absolutely the worst greyhound. I'm convinced it was a pit bull or something because it was awful. So we ended up just having to sell our supposed greyhound. All that fine money down the drain.
A bad investment. Well, all right, next question for you, Mark. From a purely financial standpoint, is it a good idea for Manchester City to sign Messi? What would the worst case scenario be in terms of the long-term financial impact on the club if they were to make this happen?
From a financial perspective, I'd say in terms of the wages and the outlay over the years, you're probably talking, could be close to £100 million a year with all the add-ons that Messi comes with. But the flip side of Man City is that they might not win the Champions League with Messi, they might not win the FA Cup or even the Premier League, but if you sign Lionel Messi, then sponsors worldwide will want to give you more money to have their names on the shirt. So I think that from a financial perspective, Man City don't lose by signing Lionel Messi. I think he makes them money. I think the question is he a football signing? Because they don't actually need him to score goals right now. And they don't need him to win the Champions League because he's not won it himself for 6 years. So I think from a financial perspective, it makes plenty of sense to get it all back.
Mark, what kind of summer transfer window you think we'll get in the coming months? Does anybody have any money other than City and PSG?
I think it'd be... I think it'll be like the January window. I think it's going to be one of these where clubs either have to drop their expectations in a big, big way, maybe cutting their valuations by half, which they won't do, or players will just sit tight and wait for 2022. You know, Paul Pogba, his contract expires in 2022. What's the point of him moving now? Nobody can afford to pay his fee, he can't afford to pay his wages. So I think a lot of players who are out of contract in 2022, they'll just sit tight because there's no money to go around this summer.
Stevie and Shaka, did you ever play with someone who was equally good with both feet, similar to Mendy at Real Madrid? Okay. How much did it benefit the player? Who comes first to mind for you?
To be honest, when you started talking there, I was thinking about Andreas Bremer. I didn't play with him.
Right.
But I always remember him in the World Cup final. He's a left back. He's got a silky left foot. And it's the World Cup final. It's 0-0. And he takes a penalty with his right foot. I had to rewind it. I was astounded. So you talk about backing yourself with both feet.
Yep.
Andrew Bremer was the guy that came to my mind.
Similar story with the 1999 U.S. Women's National Team. Remember they got in that famous penalty shootout in the final against China. Brandi Chastain took it with her opposite foot.
Right.
In a critical pressure spot. Any two-footed players for you, Shaka?
Probably the most two-footed or the one who kind of switched most seamlessly is a guy called Mark Keller, French player who played with us at West Ham. Could play either flank. Listen, I played with a lot of good players who could use both feet seemingly without, you know, any kind of hesitation. But Mark was the most natural with it. He spent a couple of years with us at West Ham before going back to France. but as natural a swap as I've seen.
Mark, which position should Manchester United prioritize? A centre forward or a right wing?
Wow. I'd say centre forward. I think, you know, right wingers are all well and good. They'll create chances, but I think you need a guy to put the ball in the back of the net. I think, you know, if United can get a Harry Kane, Erling Haaland, somebody of that quality, then for me, that's what you need, a 20, 30 goal a season striker. Because ultimately, the guy in the wing provides for the striker. If you haven't got a good enough striker, having a great winger doesn't make any difference. So they've got to get a centre forward, a proper centre forward.
You agree, Stevie?
100%.
Yeah. Pretty obvious.
Yep.
Final question, Shaka. Where is the best Trinidadian restaurant you've been to in the United States?
Best Trinidadian restaurant. I've been to a couple of good ones. There's takeout ones. There's Ali's here in Boston in Dorchester, which I frequent. Mm-hmm. But there's also a place called Joy's down in Miami that is as authentic as I've tasted outside of Trinidad.
That's where you went when we were in Miami. Mm. That's where it was, Joy's, got it. Okay, next time I lose in Miami, I'll come to Joy's.
There's another place in DC, Rita's, that I also frequent.
Okay.
And I have no idea what you're talking about. With my disappearing in Miami, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know you don't know what I'm talking about.
I was always right there.
Shaka, you know I'm in DC, where's Rita's?
Rita's is high up Georgia Avenue, just by John Hopkins up there.
Got it. All right. I'm checking it out this weekend on your recommendation. I'll tell them I know Shaka, see if I get a free meal out of it. You think? I'm sure they have a picture of him in the restaurant, you know, as a national
hero. Well, they'll think if you kick around with Shaka, you must have a few quid, so stick a few quid
exactly.
on
that. Exactly.
Or dollars, I should say.
Oh, yes, all the change that fell out of that Maserati. All right, that's it for us. We've sullied Shaka's good name enough in this edition of Extra Time. Thanks to Mark Ogden for joining us. Stevie, thanks to you as well. We will be back for tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Do not miss it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.